Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode. Today, we are talking about maternal health, infant loss, and really just some Black woman healthcare issues today here on the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and today I am joined with a few people. It's like my first roundtable discussion, so I'm super excited. I have Maisha Hedden from the American Association of Clergy and Employers. Welcome to the show. I have Dr. Carter from Project 31 and We 8. And I have Sam Pierce from Renegade Soul. She's also the director of the Christian Jaden Project, a nonprofit here in Cleveland, and the host of the Truth About Child Loss podcast. Everyone, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So I know that, I know Sam, I've known Sam for a while, helped produce the show Truth About Child Loss. So I know the impact of child loss or infant loss rather, but let's talk about that because a lot of people don't realize how impactful that is for Black women and how impactful it is of Black women here in Greater Cleveland. So whoever wants to talk about, like, what are some stats or what are some things we need to know about that?
Well, this is Sam, and I guess I'll begin because I don't know if anyone else on the line has lost any children. Have you lost any children?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm sure, and we all experience it differently, right? So I'm sure that some of the things that I'm going to say is probably going to be, you know, something that you could relate to, but I'm just going to say them, you know, say what needs to be said, and then you guys just chime in. As an educated Black woman at the time of my loss, I did not think that child loss could touch me. I did not know that it was an issue in my community. I was not nearly aware as maybe I should have been. And at the time, I was a community organizer. I was all about the justices of certain things. You know, at that time, I worked in predatory lending. So when child loss affected me, I realized that I had been fighting a good fight, but not for myself necessarily. And when my children were born and passed away, I still didn't understand how such a thing could happen. And then later to find out that this is a huge thing in my community. And I felt like I had been deceived. Like, this is like the worst secret ever held from me. Why didn't I know this? Why do I know all of the stats of predatory lending and how they target Black people, but I don't know how Black people are losing babies? You know what I mean? So after that loss, the way that it affected me is probably the way that it affects most people, is that you just do an about face and you have to rethink everything. And I believe that, you know, that might be with any loss that you experience, but especially when your children pass away, because that's not supposed to happen. Your children are supposed to bury you. You're not supposed to bury your children. And so when your babies don't have a chance to come to full gestation, then you really have to start to think about what your health looks like and how you've taken care of yourself even to make sure that that child comes in healthy. And then you start to realize that it's some things that's going on that's beyond your control, like the racism in the country and things like that. All of that plays together, and you just never gave it any thought because we live in this fantasy world where we live in the best country ever and nothing like that could ever happen. And so as we start to put everything together, when you look at the effects of child loss, you start to realize it is so much bigger than the fact that my babies could not make it to gestation. Did that make any sense?
Yes.
That made absolutely a lot of sense. Okay. And I wanna talk about that sense of basically like the communal pain in the collective consciousness around understanding that Black women as a group suffer poor outcomes of like infant mortality and negative birth outcomes such as miscarriage and stillbirth. Shayna, I know you've done this program a couple of times, but for like people that aren't entirely familiar, I just wanna backtrack and go over some of the stats, right? So Shayna, make sure you chime in because I know with your work with First Year Cleveland, you know these stats even better than I do. That with infant mortality, Black children throughout the entire United States, 5 times more likely to die within their first year. African American women are 8 times more likely to die than white women from pregnancy-related deaths. And the thing that's shocking, and Dr. Tisha Carter will talk about this in a second, is there aren't really good numbers on how much more frequently Black women miscarry than their white counterparts. And sometimes that's just called technically it's called subfecundity, but meaning like, why do we carry fewer children to term, right? And these are reproductive justice issues that we're all grappling with. And one of the things that was good about the program that I started with the American Association of Clergy and Employers is that we were able to bring together a group of 8 African American women who'd suffered some aspect of subfecundity, right? Whether it was miscarriage, stillbirth, or infant mortality. And then Sam, to your point, what happened in that room was we understood that we had a collective problem, right? That it wasn't just our individual problem and our individual grief, that it was a societal problem. And I hope, pray, that it spurred us to political action. One of the women in our group here was Dr. Tisha Carter, who experienced really tragic subfecundity, a number of miscarriages, and I'd love to introduce her. Like Tisha, would you mind chiming in?
Sure. I really wanted to definitely piggyback on Sam a little bit because I was the same way. I had no prior knowledge, and I'm assuming because I'm a very educated person that that I'm in charge of my journey when actually I'm not. As Maisha has said, I've had several miscarriages. I've had 9 miscarriages total, 1 stillborn. So this has been a long journey for me. And when it was happening to me, they just kept saying to me that this is normal. And that was kind of the word that really, I guess, I don't know, left an impression on me. Like, it's normal for a woman to have 9 miscarriages. It's normal for a woman to give birth to a stillborn baby after 5 or 6 miscarriages. How is that normal? And I just began to think about how we establish norms and think about what we consider to be normal. And I came from an environment where I grew up in a lot of diversity. So I didn't know the gravity of how is it was impacting my own community. The most of the African American women I met had no problem giving birth. My story was unique. Most of the Caucasian women I met, this didn't happen to them. My story was unique. And then I met Maisha and also Charlotte and began to hear other women's stories. So this is all actually very new and fresh to me, to know that this is happening and that it's happening to so many women. I felt so alone and thought and felt helpless. I really did, because doctors kept telling me, this is normal, this is normal, this is normal. That's all I kept hearing. Every miscarriage, there was no like extensive testing done on me. No one tried to find out why it was happening. I still don't have answers to this day why my husband and I had so many miscarriages. They didn't do any testing on him. it was just like, this is normal, ma'am. This is normal. I remember we got married in 2007 of January. In 2007 of July, I had my first miscarriage. So from 2007 of July to 2015 of August, just miscarriage after miscarriage after miscarriage after miscarriage. And them and the doctors and the medical staff telling me that this was normal. And them also sending me to several different specialists that didn't have any answers. I've been to 7 different doctors who have not given me any answers on why my husband and I were unable to have a baby and why we had so many miscarriages. And I mean, I could go into detail about the mistreatment that we received, going through the process, but I honestly did not know it was a problem until I started interacting with the group of ladies in this project. So I think that there is a huge responsibility on media that they haven't exposed this or put it on a bigger platform that women like myself, who are educated women, who have who are well-rounded, cultured, you know, all of the things that they require us to be. And then for them to say, like, oh, this is normal for this to happen to you. And then we're not informed about the fact that this is happening to so many African-American women. Like that the stats that Maisha was just sharing, I mean, that's absurd.
It's
how is that normal?
Thank you for that. I've not lost children. I did have a scare when I was delivering my first kid that I wasn't sure if she was going to make it. Apgar score of 3, did all the right things, you know, young, whatever. And so that was the closest thing that I have gotten to this, although knowing Sam and knowing a few other friends, I know people that have lost children or miscarried. I want to put this conversation in perspective because I know that it's very possible that as we continue to talk, you know, we are going through a traumatic experience as a whole right now today as people. And so I just want to make sure that that's framed, that, you know, just today's date is, what is this, May 29th. And we are currently, you know, still in the midst of a pandemic and dealing with a lot of protests of what's happening in Minneapolis and Louisville last night, even Columbus. So I just wanted to put that out just to frame, to put that around the conversation, because it's May, it's Mental Health Month. Mental health is very important for me to put into perspective and make sure that we are okay. And I often say that sometimes just being a Black female is a traumatic experience here in America.
Yes.
And so
absolutely,
as we're talking about one trauma, we're also experiencing multiple other traumas at the same time. So I want to just make sure that the audience knows, and for you all that are sharing today, because I'm going to get out of the way of this conversation, that it is a, you know, that there are, this is a hard conversation to have, and this is a hard time to have a hard conversation. So I do thank you.
I want to kind of chime in and frame also the death at the hands of the police of the man in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that just happened, I think, what, 2 or 3 days ago?
Yeah.
Because it ties into something that has caused me to think while working on this project about reproductive justice. So my background is numbers, right? Like, I'm a quant. I look at numbers because I think there's a lot of truth in just looking at the data, right? So in 1860, the African American population in the United States was 12%. At the most recent census in 2010, the African American population was 12.4%. If you look at all of the intervening years, again, from 1860 all the way up to 2010, our percent of the American population has never been greater than 14.1, and it's never been less than 9.8. And so anybody who studies numbers over a large span will tell you that if the number stays consistent, there's something holding it in place. There's a control. I think that the issue of reproduction, reproductive justice, I think it's insidious. I do. I think whether doctors are conscious of it or not, I think it's a population control measure. And it concerns me. I can tell you that in our program is called Beauty for Ashes. You can find more about it by going to our website at American Association of Clergy and Employers. We were able to find 8 women who were willing to take audio interviews and also write their personal narratives. Dr. Tisha Carter's is gorgeous. It's a beautiful story about what happened to them during their pregnancies. Because the purpose of the project is this, because we're about solutions, right? Everybody knows the stats. We know that Black babies are not being born and that they are dying. The purpose of our project is to find solutions. So what are we gonna do now? And for me and my partners, Literary Cleveland, Freshwater Cleveland, Cleveland Clergy Coalition, First Year Cleveland, we firmly believe that if we're gonna get down to the solution, the what happened and how do we fix it at its roots, it's gonna come from the women themselves. It's gonna be from them, from people like Dr. Tisha Carter, from another participant, Chastity Strotter, from another participant, Miracle Milan. It's gonna come from those women telling us exactly what happened during their pregnancies. So to Dr. Tisha Carter's point, we're talked about mistreatment during her nine miscarriages. Guess what? Every single story, all 8, have stories of mistreatment, stories of the women walking out with the impressions that their doctors just didn't care. And those are the stories that we're going to tell.
So tell me more about the project. Like I have a different project, and actually my project is working on.
Before she does that, I just want to touch on just a couple of things really quickly, because the perspective of where we are in the country right now, you gave us that perspective. And I just wanted to say that, One of the things that I struggle the most with when I'm thinking about child loss and where we are right now. So in my experience and in my work history, I've been exposed to things like social determinants of health. Oh, and let me back up. Dr. Carter, thank you so much for all of the things that you just said, because I know from experience that it takes extreme bravery to just be able to own the fact that these things have happened to you. So thank you for sharing that with all of us. So my exposure to social determinants of health and racism as a whole and how it affects our health, not just our mental health, but our health, and how it affects how well we as Black women can carry our babies or not. And for them to say, oh, this is normal, we can be outraged at it, but it is normal because our bodies respond to our environment. And we live in a stressful environment. We live in an environment where we're not valued, where we are not, and it's evident in their verbiage to us. Oh, this is normal. Go home and try again. Who are you talking to? That, oh, this is normal, go home and try again. Oh, this is normal. This is not anything that we have any control over. It really is. We could make some systemic changes that would better take care of Black women and our bodies and our Black men. because that's our support. So when I think about all of the things that we are facing today, I've actually had this thought many years ago, but it rings true today, which is why I struggle so hard, is that why do I fight so hard to bring these babies into the world when America's gonna kill them? And that's why they don't care that this Black issue of infant mortality and child loss exists, because they don't care that one less Black baby comes into the world, and they don't care until it affects white babies. And so I think that that needs some perspective if we're going to be totally honest with what we're facing. And all of the stories that I heard during, you know, the recording of the first season of The Truth About Child Loss, I had other people come in, because my child loss is one experience that I've had. It's not everybody's experience. Like, I've had a miscarriage. I've had, you know, babies that were born way too soon. And then I've had a positive birth outcome. So I lost twins, had a healthy set of twins. Everybody don't have that. But I had to hear all of the other stories, like what Dr. Carter was just talking about, having miscarriage after miscarriage after miscarriage. I had one lady on my show that talked about a miscarriage, and they didn't DNC her. And she had a baby, a piece of the baby left in her. It almost killed her, and no doctor would listen to her. So I think that all of this is just one of those things where you just like, and I've been texting Shayna throughout this whole thing, like, oh my God, I'm struggling so bad. I don't know if I can stay on, you know, I'm struggling so bad right now. And part of it is the climate that we are in right now. But the other part is the reality that child loss and infant mortality might be the least of our worries. And this is so huge. And so if this is the least of our worries right now, what state are we really in, you know, as people?
See, I don't think it's the least of our worries. I think that what we have going on right now, because context, right, Shayna? Mm-hmm. With that, it's a mosaic of the same tiled floor of death. It's a tiled floor of death, because you've got what we're talking about here, right? Reproductive justice. And then you've got COVID-19 that disproportionately kills Black people. And then you've got police brutality. And then you've got the good people working on prison reform. I'm going to shamelessly plug my husband, Judge Raymond Hedden, who's really trying to get to sentencing reform and trying to figure out, why are we putting these Black men in these prisons for so long, right? Over minor stuff. You could end up in prison. But the thing is, it's the unevenness of sentencing. If you've got two guys, one white, one Black, they did exactly the same thing, and they have the same number of priors, the Black guy will get something like 5 to 10 more years. Those are the issues that he's tackling. Anyway, this is all about the mosaic of death, right? The one that we're caring about here is reproductive justice. But they're also dealing with the death issue over there. Because we're trying to survive as a people. Sam, I know this is so emotional and you're really struggling right now. The story you told about the woman and the DNC, we have one of our women told the same story, right? She carried a child to 36 weeks, and you know, 40 weeks is full term. So it's basically a full term baby. You can expect a child going to 36 weeks to live. The child died in utero, right? For all of us who have been pregnant before, like when your baby stops moving, you feel it. You're like, my child has died. Like, cause I've been there. Like, I don't want to talk about it. But I know, like, I remember I felt the stop of movement, and I knew what happened. So 36 weeks, she feels the movement stop. She goes into her doctor. Doctor does ultrasound. Child's dead. They made her wait 4 days before inducing labor. She had to carry a dead baby in her, I'm told me not to be the table. She had to carry a dead baby in her stomach for 4 days before they induced labor. And to me, that's a sign you don't care. You're not feeling her pain. And these are the stories we need to tell. Especially since, like, guess what, Sam? You know that story. I know that story. That means there's somebody else who's got the same story.
Yeah, and I think we can all probably say we know someone that lost a child. You know what I mean? And it's odd to be able to say that anyone listening to this podcast can probably say, oh, wow, you know, I never realized that's probably what so-and-so went through. You know, because it is prevalent, but we all know someone here or there. I think that's just an interesting insight, just making connections on my end. But I want to talk about the movie Toxic, because I know, Sam, you've been a big proponent. You're in Toxic, the movie. For people that haven't heard of it or don't know anything about it, let's talk about what that is and kind of how all that came to be, first year Cleveland and all those things, the background and the setting of Cleveland in this. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that, because I think it's, so the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Committee is a committee that I sit on. It's one of several committees that sit on 11 action teams through First Year Cleveland. And I sit on the, don't ask me which action team it is in this moment, because I can't think of one thing. But it's the action team that deals with. I'm sorry.
Say again, Maisha?
Pregnancy and Infant Loss. It's the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Committee.
Is that the committee, Sam?
That's the committee as a whole. The action teams are broken down into 11 action teams. And I think I am part of Action Team 2, as I'm thinking about it, which deals with racial disparity and parent voices. So, one of the things that we were wanting to put together was an educational tool that can be used that talks about a day in the life of the Black woman and what it looks like in her pregnancy. And we were able to work with some amazing people and get the project done. It's a 30-minute film that is basically that. It's called Toxic. It's about the day in the life of a Black woman and her pregnancy, and the pregnancy ends prematurely and the baby dies. But I mean, it covers all of the innuendos of the very passive aggressive racism that we face on a daily basis in our workplace, when we go shopping, when we go, you know, at our kids' schools, you know, all kind of things like that. And National Geographic, we were able to get them to create a, it's called a talking point. I don't know what that, I'm at a loss of words for what it's called, but it's the, oh, it's the guide, the discussion guide. They created the discussion guide for the movie. This is an educational tool that is intended to use around hospital systems and any other system that needs to see what Black women are facing all the time that causes a preterm birth. Because while we're not talking about, you know, child loss and preterm birth, this particular woman had a preterm birth and lost the baby. But what we know for certain is that of all the child loss, infant loss, I should say, the infant mortality rate, the highest is preterm birth. And that's especially true of Black women. And so when we worked on the project, I'm in it. I have like a cameo. It's the best cameo you ever did see. You can see the back of my head. It's like rainbow, you know. But my son is also in it, and his cameo just takes the whole show. So the best cameo you ever did. Okay. Anyway, but it's very, very important to look at these, right? Because I don't think the general public outside of us will watch it. I mean, I'm looking at four Black women in this discussion right now, and all four of us will watch it and be like, yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah. Oh, I've had that happen to me before. We'll all say to ourselves, yeah, this is a day in the life, right? but you showed this to some doctors. And before, and you have to have the conversation beforehand, like before you start to say that your client is non-compliant for not coming to the appointment when there's violence in her city and she couldn't stand outside the bus stop, you need to know what's in a day in the life of a Black woman. So in this particular film, we took it from the aspect of an educated woman who's married in a healthy relationship, because we thought that it was important to show that aspect. And I love that Devin Collins from Stimuli Films, he was so just excellent in putting that out there. Like this, we're not talking about the uneducated and the people in poverty, because I think that that's something that we just expect, yeah. Right? We are talking about the women who have master's degrees, who are professionals. This woman was a lawyer, she was a lawyer, and she still had a higher chance of losing her baby than that of a white woman with no high school diploma. These are the important things that we wanted to get across. And so that when you are looking at a room full of doctors, nurses, or whoever that's servicing us as women, they need to understand the things that we go through outside of that doctor's office. It plays a major role in what happens in that doctor's office. And it is important. It is not normal. This is not something that we should be having to go through. And so that's the movie. It's available actually to nonprofits at a discounted rate now. And it comes with the discussion guide and everything. And I just think it's the most powerful thing that I've seen. And, you know, we have a lot of viewings, and a lot of times I'll show up and sit on panels for it. And it's an amazing discussion, because I'm amazed at how often people just don't get it until you show them something like this, you know?
I agree, Sam. I think that, I'm sorry.
Go.
I think that one of the points that you made is they attempt to make it a economic issue and not a race issue. I also think that, you know, there's so many ways that they try to discredit or diminish our plight. And it's so frustrating. I really empathize with your frustration. I love your passion. I'm just like, no, this is happening because of race. It has nothing to do with anything else but race. If I can't get the same quality of care as any other of any white person, then this is about race. This has nothing to do if I have insurance, if I don't have insurance, if I have county insurance, if I have a HMO, PPO. Like, I don't want to have that conversation, because that's not the issue. The issue is I come into your office, I'm African American, and you immediately discredit anything I have to say just by my skin color. And I'm also mistreated. I've like recently had a doctor's appointment with a doctor that I don't normally see, but because of the pandemic, I had to see this doctor because my doctor was not available. And she just continually to talk over me, like through the whole conversation. This is a virtual appointment, so she can see me. She knows my color. And she just continued to talk over me through the whole conversation. And I like had to stop her, like, ma'am, you don't know me, and I know what I'm experiencing. And if you don't allow me to communicate what I'm experiencing, how can you effectively help me? And she like continued to give me, like began to give me her resume and how many accomplishments she has. And I was like, you know what? Thank you. And I hung up the phone. Because I'm like, I'm trying to explain to you what my health issue is, and you're a doctor and you're supposed to receive. How can you even treat me if you aren't listening to what my symptoms are? I say two things and you're like, oh, it must be this. No, every person is an individual. And I know that we have to have certain classifications and certain barometers in order to treat people. However, Becky down the street may have different symptoms than I may have. And Tanisha, two blocks from me, may have the same symptoms but have something different as well. But because I'm African American, you're discrediting me. Or I hate the phrase of you're being dramatic or you're exaggerating. And I'm like, I bet you if you put if you take my screen down and you have a conversation with two women and we're saying the same exact things, if you can't see us, you're probably going to respond the same. But as soon as you can see us and the other person is Caucasian, then you're going to respond differently. So I just wanted to kind of piggyback on what Sam was saying, that they just truly try to diminish what the true problem is or ignore what the true problem is. I also wanted to talk a little bit about what Sam and Maisha both pointed out, is that like we're having babies and then our babies grow up and they mistreat our babies. Like while I've had tons of miscarriages and I've also had a stillborn, I do have one son that that was a full-blown pregnancy, but I had issues with that pregnancy as well. That's another story. But I have that anxiety every time he leaves the house. My son is 22 years old, and for Memorial Day, he wanted to go hang out with his friends. And because the George Floyd situation had just happened, I was so anxious. I was like, text me, let me know where you guys are going. Leave your location on your phone on. I'm like, don't wear your hoodie, wear your regular jacket. Like, there, we had to have this whole conversation, and I'm like, we should not live in a world where I have to give my son a lecture before he can go hang out with his friends. And some of his friends are Caucasian. So I'm like, you can't operate the same way they do. They have certain freedoms and liberties that you don't have access to. If you guys go into a store, don't put your hands in your pocket. Make sure you stay with them. Do not separate from them. Do not isolate yourself, because they're going to get a pass and you aren't. And I mean, even that, him being in a car with predominantly Caucasian young men makes me nervous, because I know they're going to a place where my son will probably be the only African American, or there will only be a small number of us represented at whatever activity that they're going to do. Even that makes me nervous. And I don't want to say that I am like against the police, because I have relatives that are police officers, but there has to be something done. We cannot continue to ignore this, where I can't just let my son go hang out with his friends and not text him like every hour, like, where are you guys? What are you doing? What time do you think you're gonna come home? And my husband doesn't have to also give him a lecture on, if the police pull you over, this is what you need to do. Like, this is so ridiculous. Sam was making so many good points, and I just kind of wanted to chime in before we moved on to the next topic and speak on my personal experiences with that, because I feel like that's what we need to hear. Because there's so many times that I am not aware of what's going on and how it's happening to other people of my community. I mean, I have to shamefully say that I'm so far removed from my community that I'm not really informed like I should be. And I think that it's our stories that really kind of help each other. So we can do better. So we can band together and make some changes and have our voices be heard. Otherwise, we're just isolated in different places, and we don't know that, hey, this is not just happening to you, it's happening to me too.
I agree. I think especially having the kids, you know, you go through that whole thing, like you said, you're trying to just deliver a healthy baby to have a great start and have a great life. And then the idea that you brought this child in, that you're still trying to give this kid a life. I mean, no one else has to go through that, where you deliver a baby, you know, minus a child that's actually medically ill or has some issues. And the whole thing is, I'm just trying to keep you alive. And I remember one day my son and I were having like some spat in the house, and he's like, well, you don't do anything. I said, look here, I've kept you alive 15 years. I have done so much for you. Just in that thought, like, you're safe. and I run this list down at the house all the time, when they start getting into the, well, so-and-so has this, look, you're safe, no one is harming you at home, like, you're in a good school district where, like, we can control the messaging you get from school, like, I can be up there in a second and have that conversation. You know, like, you're not in danger walking to the corner, not, you know, more than anyone else. It's not like you're having shootings or drive-bys or any of that. Like, you live in a protected neighborhood, so to speak, and you've made it to be 15, almost 16 years old. So I have done, as your mom, just an amazing job just in that, because you're still here. And it sucks to say that, like, I win the mom prize just because I kept you alive. Yay. Like, yes. The breathing, I win. And thinking about, you know, to one of your points earlier about just the microaggressions we go through, I think the ones when it's health disparities are the ones that sneak in and get us. Because we realize in the work, we know those trigger words or those tones in the workplace. You know, oh, well, you know, so you know that. You know that tone, you know that word, you know that, you know that sting. But in a medical situation, you don't know, because you're in a medical situation. So if the doctor says, hey, your test results came back, you know, normal, like, so that's it, so you don't have to worry about this thing, you take them at their word, because you don't think that it's not normal. You know, you're a doctor, and we still have that trust, because I can't even imagine what mistrust in the medical field is, even though we know the stats we know. And so thinking about it, I wrote about it for Black Girl CLE, one of my own experiences where I went to a doctor year after year and said, I don't feel good. And she would run some tests. I went to another doctor. He was like, how long you had this problem? And he told me exactly what it was. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't know I had this problem. We went into like surgery in 2 weeks. It was such a big problem. Like, you're going to surgery in 2 weeks. I went to the doctor every inkling. I don't feel well. Maybe you're stressed. Maybe it's your anxiety. Well, I'm anxious because you're stressing me out, you know? And I don't want to take that off today's topic, but I think it's something in the, we haven't figured out what that is that we can't pinpoint when we're being, for lack of a better, you know, like, we've just been fed a line of bull from doctors, or we're being dismissed. It's perfectly normal. This happens. Well, we know that miscarriages could happen. So you're not like, oh, okay, but you don't know what you don't know. They didn't tell you whatever. And because we think, well, hey, I've got my life together. I've got a PhD in this. I'm a scholar in this. I'm an educator. I'm a what have you. We don't think it's us. And I think that's one of the things to talk about as a whole, but also the idea that it is everything, back to the movie Toxic. And so I have a project too, my issue looking at food insecurity, but they all go together. So medical care, transportation.
It all goes together.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Food insecurity, education, all of those things, housing, predatory lending.
Because it's about obesity, blood pressure.
Right. All of that goes to mental health. I mean, even just the, you're probably just, your anxiety's kicking in. It probably is kicking in, because look what I'm dealing with on a normal day. So it's not my anxiety. I might not even be anxious. I'm just living. But because my scale numbers are so off the scale compared to someone else's who doesn't have to live with this kind of day-to-day ridiculousness, then yeah, it is anxiety, and that's causing other stresses. So I want to move forward, because I know we're going to run out of time. And
a super, super quick comment. Just something about something you said about, like, communicating with your physician, right? So part of what my project Beauty for Ashes is doing is, as we're taking these interviews and we're taking these first person narratives from our participants, we're asking them to distill their experience down into a 1-point manifesto. Every woman, 1 manifesto. Like, if you had a chance to speak to the CEO of one of the major hospitals, or directly to your to your doctor, or to a Black woman who's getting ready to head into the doctor's office, what would your point of advice be to that person? And we're, along with the women's, like, their stories and their recordings, we're going to post these manifestos, because everybody has something to say about it. For example, one woman, she's a diminutive woman. She's like, unlike me, she's got like a small voice, and she's a very gentle person, right? And her manifesto is, ask the tough questions, because, like, she didn't want to offend. Like, she never wants to offend, and she didn't have the courage, right? she was always thinking the questions, but never really just kind of like worked up that verb to just go ahead and say, you know what, I will ask my doctor these questions. So these are the kind of things that we're working on.
So tell me more about how we can find out more about the project, or for all of you, because I know, and we're going to, even with Sam, you've started a whole career change in life with Renegade Soul because of Black Women's Health. How can we support? What can the audience or listenership do, like, to help support your messaging?
Do you want me to go first? Or what I would love for people to do is this. I have a website, American Association of Clergy and Employers. If you've got, if you have a story about reproductive justice, whether it's about miscarriage, stillborn, preterm birth, or the loss of a child, I'd love for you to fill out the form and reach out, because we'd like to have your story. My call to action is this. This is a new direction that the project is headed in, and it's called Pull Your Records. Again, we're all about solutions. And so what we want to do is to get a certain number of women, we're hoping to get at least 5, who are willing to go to their physicians for, like, during the time that they were pregnant and pull their records. Ask for your medical records, and then we're going to get experts in the field to go through and look at your records and see what should have been done, right? Like, was there a miss? Like, is there just some glaring action? Because again, it's not about, like, constantly crying about this problem. We want to fix it. We want our doctors to take better care of us. So this is what I would ask you to do going forward.
Oh my God.
Also, I want to say too, that on the website, and hopefully I can give this to you, Shayna, too, we do have a list of just, like, resources, right? Of, like, really great books and really great papers that have written about, like, how to have a healthy pregnancy. They were written by Black women who've experienced what we have.
Definitely. We'll include the link to in the show liner, and we'll also include it on our website and mm-hmm. other places, so people can access that information. Sam, what were you going to say?
I just think that's phenomenal. I'll try not to ramble too bad on this one, because I work on several projects. So first, let me touch upon PAIL, which is the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Committee. We have a parent group called PAIL Connect, and you can visit our Instagram page and our Facebook page, PAIL Connect CLE, and that's PAIL, PAIL, for Pregnancy and Infant Loss. PAIL Connect CLE. Is it CLE? Is the CLE on there? I gotta remember. And then our website is paleconnect.org. We have, and I say we, meaning everybody but me, took the time to vet counselors. This is a very, very important aspect of what we are doing here. The committee took great care in vetting Black counselors who could assist in child loss grief.
That's huge.
Very, very important. Say that again, Shayna.
That's huge.
Okay. Because I wanted to make sure that y'all know that I did not sit in on any of those meetings.
Thank the committee, but not Sam. We got you.
Yes. But the work that they did, when I tell you, and that these counselors are so committed that they sat through 3 separate 1-hour meetings just to be a part of the, because they met with one of our counselors already, and then met with the chairs of the committee, and then met with someone else to make sure that this was a perfect fit for what our committee is trying to do here. They sent several of us through the grief recovery method, and we are all certified now as grief recovery method specialists. Another very, very important thing, because the PAIL committee on our action team too, one of the things that we want to make sure that we do, because the parent voices are what matters, is that we enable the parents. There's nobody better to help a parent through child loss than another parent. But we have to make sure that the parents that we enable are ready, can actually do it. My loss was 10 years ago. It still hurt like yesterday, but we're not going to put somebody whose loss was yesterday on the front lines to go and help somebody else. You know what I mean? So we had to make sure that people were willing and able. And they've been, you know, so many of us have been enabled to do that, put through the training. It was the hardest thing that maybe I've ever done in my entire life, other than the people that were important to me that I lost, including my children. So those are some of the things that's going on the pale side. Shayna was talking about how I did a whole career. I just up and quit my job one day, y'all. I ain't even gonna lie. I just up and quit. I was like, you know what? I'm done with this. Let me back up. I'm about to ramble crazy and I'm gonna try to go as fast as I can. But I went and got my master's degree in social work. I have no idea why I got that master's degree, because I never wanted to work in social work. Does that make sense? I was always a community organizer and I always wanted to fight on the front lines, but I never wanted to be somebody who's sitting in front of somebody trying to diagnose them with body dysmorphia or anything like that. You know, like that was just never my cup of tea. But I don't know how I wound up in this program, but I did, and that's nothing but God. And I graduated with this master's degree in social work from CASE. And as soon as I graduated, I went looking for a job. I couldn't find one that was a perfect fit. Well, the reason was that nothing would fit me, right? And that was God also, right? So you got to start paying attention to how God starts to move in your own life, right? So he gave me this child loss, and then he gave me this master's degree, none of which I asked for. And furthermore, I got this job, this penny ante job. And I started doing personal training on the side, and my fitness journey began in the middle of all of that. And then what I realized during that fitness journey was that, oh, I'm off my blood pressure pills. How did that happen? Wait a minute. My life insurance just went down because my health is a little bit better. How did that happen? And in the middle of all of that, I started to realize, well, wait a minute. If I had better health metrics to begin with, is it possible that Christian and Jaden, who are the twins that passed away, could have survived the gestation period? Was my body so unhealthy that, you know, and my stress level so out of whack that I just couldn't carry them? We already know that stress is what kicks a woman into labor. So if I had better, do we know that stress is what kicks a woman into labor? I want to make sure that everybody here knows that stress is what kicks a woman into labor. So when you hit the stress point of labor, your body can't do anything other than go into labor. And so if Black women have a baseline higher than white women, then of course we're going to hit that level quicker, which is what causes us to have our babies way too early. So with that said, if I had better grips on my own stress level and my body a little bit more healthy, could I have had a different birth outcome? And that began to play on me, you know, pretty bad. So when I began personal training, it was always around the premise of making sure that women had a place to work out their stress, that women, especially of childbirth age, would be able to get themselves together way before ever even thinking about having a baby. Because our young kids are not thinking about having babies, but they are into sports, cheer, and all that stuff. Now, if we could cultivate that a little bit more, we probably could get them to be a little bit more active throughout the rest of their life. And especially if we put it on them in such a way that, hey, your physical fitness is very, very important. And so in the middle of all of this, I began personal training other clients and started to see how important it was that the personal training be that me time, that stress reliever, and people are starting to see other great health outcomes. I have one client whose diabetes numbers went all the way down. The doctors are like, what are you doing? Don't stop that. You know, like, and it's amazing to me how important these things are, but they don't want to pay for personal training, but they will pay for the doctor and they'll pay for the medicine. And so I think we need to do an about face on that and some more education around, you know, I mean, not only are you going to look amazing, but you're also going to be way healthier, and you are also going to have people watching you who you may rub off on them, especially the young folks, and they may have better birth outcomes. And so that's how Renegade Soul was born. I up and quit my job in the middle of all of that because I was like, I mean, I think I can have more impact in my personal training. And there's also this social work aspect of it, which is why I'm like, okay, God just kind of placed that right in my lap, right? You'd be surprised at how much social work I get done in the middle of a session. And so now Renegade Soul is looking at, I know, right? And I'd be like, why did you bring that problem to me? And I mean, they come and they'd be like, Sam, I want to talk to you about blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what made you think I wanted to hear that? All right, tell me about it again. You know, okay, this is what I think. Maybe. So what happens is now Renegade Soul is starting to pivot a little bit into more like partnering with counselors. Okay, so we have the counseling piece and the fitness piece, the physical fitness piece together. And I think that that's going to be an important change in the physical fitness world. So that's Renegade Soul. I don't know, did I miss anything?
No, that was good. I wanted to make sure you touched on that point because the idea of most of us get trainers to look good or for vacation or I just want to lose some weight to fit in the clothes. But mm-hmm. you were the first person that ever connected that to me, Sam, about maternal health and physical fitness. So, yeah. You know, when I was young, you know, I was a decent size, but I never thought, wow, you know, if I don't get my blood sugar, you know, like I knew about gestational diabetes and all those things, but it never, no, because I think as Black women, and I'm going to cast a wide net to say this, we're not the folks that plan pregnancies, so to speak. Like we just kind of, we don't take those things into effect of your temperature and your this and your weight and unless you're having struggles getting pregnant with infertility. Mm-hmm. And so that idea of how much did you weigh going into this, you know, those kind of things never crossed my mind. And, mm-hmm. and as you were talking, I was even thinking about just from my teacher standpoint, how much struggle we see with Black girls wanting to take PE. Now, there's lots of reasons for that, but it starts to create that sedimentary lifestyle mm-hmm. in middle school. Like, we liked cheer, we liked all these things as young girls, and then we just stop because society yeah. kind of takes us away from that or says something. So, thank you for that. I want to go to Dr. Carter. Tell us about how we can contact, support you. And then I got one more question before we wrap up because I realized we didn't talk about something. Go ahead.
So I actually don't have any like projects that are dedicated to this topic currently, except for the Beauty for Ashes process project with Maisha. A lot of my passions are geared towards the antiquated views of the Bible that infuses our society and causes women to be oppressed. That's basically my platform. I do run into a lot of women who have had miscarriages or are going through a difficult pregnancy that I tend to mentor one-on-one because they find out my story and they're like, how are you still sane? So my website is project31llc.com. You can catch me on all of my social medias as Dr. TLC Squared. And my email is project31films@gmail.com because in 2013, I think it was, I may have the year wrong, I'm so bad at dates. I did a documentary about women who were living biblical lives and using the Proverbs 31 woman as a guide for how they were living their lives. So that documentary can actually be found, I think it's on the YouTube channel, which is Project 31 is the name of the YouTube channel. So I'm excited to be involved in all of these projects. I'm excited to have met all of you women today to hear your stories. I'm excited to be involved with the project, the Beauty for Ashes project with Maisha, because I've met so many women with interesting stories who have walked through a lot of this. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things that was said. Shana, you were talking about how Black women don't plan for pregnancy. We don't have the luxury to plan for pregnancy. We live Absolutely. In a world that does not provide us the opportunity to plan that way. I mean, there are some of us who have those luxuries, But when you look at the majority of African-American women don't have the resources, don't have the bandwidth to plan a pregnancy. It's like, oh, okay, I'm pregnant. Let's work through this.
I agree. Then, that's what my mom would say. She says, I remember asking her, I'm sorry to interrupt, I remember asking her, and she's, you know, like, are babies a mistake? You know how that question? She's
yeah.
Like, she just was like, no, we Black folks. Like,
right.
We don't plan. And I'm just like, oh, you know, you see it in the movies. We should plan to have, you know. And so mm-hmm. That's the thought I always have of, like, I'm still not married, but it is what it is. I have two wonderful kids. Yes. So, yeah. Sorry to cut you off. Continue on.
No, you're fine. I also wanted to piggyback on the fact that we've been talking about the different standards and the different treatments, but I feel like, I mean, the thing that's, I guess, the thing that's common through all of it is that the barometer is white, the metrics are white, the guide is white, and the plan is white. So you're trying to force my African-American existence into a white structure. That's why I can't get healthcare that I need. If you tell me that I'm obese at my height and my weight, well, that metric is based on a Caucasian woman. Her body doesn't process food the way I do. If I exercise, she may exercise once a week and be fine. I probably need to exercise 5 days a week. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a ridiculous notion to treat me with a white system and I'm Black. And then I just wanted to piggyback on what Sam was saying. I have a lot of food allergies. Like, probably the list of things that I can eat is probably a list of 10 things. And I noticed during one of my pregnancies that what I ate was impacting, like, the baby's movement and how I was feeling that day. And then Tia Maury, you guys know the Tia and Tamara twins, mm-hmm. wrote yeah. a whole blog about how she needed to change her diet to get pregnant. And we never had that conversation. No doctor has ever had a conversation with me about connecting diet with pregnancy. And then through my ministry, I met another young lady who came to one of my events, and she was like, hey, I saw your, because I have a testimonial on my YouTube channel. And she was like, hey, I saw your testimonial about your journey of trying to have a child with your husband. And she was like, she was a physician's assistant, African-American young girl. And she was like, I have been doing research on the connection between food and miscarriages. Mm. And I have another friend that her sons are actually my godchildren. She graduated from college with my husband. She talks about how she changed her diet, and that's how she had her sons, because she struggled so much with the first pregnancy, had a miscarriage, and then had her first son. But how she had her first son was changing her diet. So Sam, those are definitely points that our community needs to hear, because I think that we eat what's convenient for us, and not because we have access to other things. It's just what's convenient for us. If you look at where the most fast food places, corner stores are, they're in our communities. If you go out right. into the suburbs, right. In my suburb, they have an ordinance against fast food places. We have one fast food place that has been here since this community has existed, and they are unwilling to put any other fast food places in here.
What community is that?
It's Shaker Heights. We only have the Wendy's.
Yep.
And they have an ordinance against having any drive-throughs and any other fast food places built in their community. But if you go into other areas, more urban areas, it's a Wendy's, it's a McDonald's, it's a Popeyes, like, and they're all streamed together.
Yep.
And we eat because it's out of convenience. And we're usually the ones that are working the 9-to-5s. Mm-hmm. So we need something quick, and we're trying to get something quick. And a lot of us, I have a ministry towards single moms. A lot of us are single moms. So we're working all day and we're trying to get something quick to feed our kids. But no doctor says, hey, you probably shouldn't eat that because you're pregnant now, because this food affects this in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So there's so many conversations that need to be had. And I guess those were the points that I was trying to make earlier with regard to all of the things that influences our issue with having babies that doesn't get addressed because they just want to have an economic conversation.
Mm-hmm. The city of Lyndhurst actually does, they have an ordinance against drive-throughs, and they don't have one drive-through in their community. And in 2000, I think it was either 16 or 17, they also had a 0% infant mortality rate.
Wow, wow.
See?
So I think it's important that we start talking about that type of stuff right there.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So we're running out of time, but final question we didn't talk about. Can someone please just talk about what is the wave of light? Like, I know we all kind of know it. Sam, you're like, I have this wave of light ceremony. I didn't know until you went through last year how large it was. You know, it's like me saying I'm working on a project. I didn't realize it. So for people that don't know, what is the wave of light ceremony? When is that date? Just
The pregnancy and infant loss community, pregnancy and infant loss awareness month is the month of October. And pregnancy and infant, that was, I believe, 1988, President Reagan, I believe. Y'all can fact check that. Sorry, my knee was bothering me. Y'all can fact check that. I'm pretty sure that that was the case, but the day, October 15th, is International Pregnancy and Infant Loss Day. Or I should say world, not international. World Pregnancy and Infant Loss Day. And the wave of light came to be because the thought was, if everybody in the world lit a candle for their deceased baby at 7 p.m., what in your time zone, that there will be 24 hours of lit candles for deceased babies. And that's where it's a wave of light. So you just leave the candle lit for an hour or longer for your baby or someone else's baby that you know. And that's what it is. So every October 15th, since Christian and Jaden were born and gone, I was blessed enough to be a part of an organization that had just started a wave of light. And we participated in that wave of light. I mean, it was like 10 people the first year that we went. Like, they just started it. And by the next year, it was 50, 100. We had to move, you know. But it wasn't, should I be so bold to say, it wasn't made for us. This was an event at a place of counseling that I was participating in because there were no Black places to get this same level of counseling. And the wave of light, I mean, there are Black people there, and we are still very, very close to Black people that were there, still very close to those women, and some of the white women too, still very close to them. But when the Pell Committee said, okay, Sam, what do you want to do? And I was like, wave of light. And I need money for candles. And yeah, and they were like, here you go. Go handle that. And so it's a beautiful thing because now we actually get to target Black families. Anybody can come. But now we actually get to target Black families and say, please come and get your child's name read out loud. And you come and you light your baby's candle. Because see, and I always describe it in this way because people don't get it. When your child dies, when you have that miscarriage, when your baby doesn't make it, when your baby doesn't make it to full term, you lose every single opportunity to have that child's name called for kindergarten graduation, sporting events, high school. You don't think about that. And so we have shown up to every single wave of light every year since Christian and Jaden passed away faithfully for the simple opportunity just to hear them call their name. And that the family then gets up and go and light that candle in honor of that baby or those babies. And the question that I always get is, but mine was a miscarriage, does that matter? It absolutely matters, you know, it absolutely matters. Did you name this baby? Even if you didn't, guess what? It's going, you know, we will call your baby, baby Carter 1, baby Carter 2. Baby Carter 3, baby, and we're going to call them individually. We're not calling baby, you know, the Carter family, come up and light your candles. No, we're calling them by name, each one of them, because each one of them mattered. and the candle lighting starts at, we've held ours at Botanical Gardens. This year we're looking at, girl, we had 66 babies that first year, and last year, 66 candles, I should say. We prepared 66 candles. Let me be very, very clear. Because when we got to the Wave of Light, there were other people, and we call them up at the end, hey, if you did not register and would like your baby's name called, because maybe you didn't realize what this was, line up and we will call your baby by name. And they lined up. And I mean lined up. Second year, which was last year, we actually prepared 101 candles. And this year, in light of COVID, looking at how we're going to be able to do way more than 100 babies this year, because it continues to grow. And when word gets out, people are like, wait a minute, there's a ceremony that calls my baby by name? You mean to tell me that it didn't matter that mine was a miscarriage and that I didn't give my baby a name, they will still give me a candle for my baby that didn't make it? Yes. And that's very important. So, you know, I'll let you ladies chime in at this point. I think that's, you know, every October 15th, when we're in person, ours is always held at the Botanical Gardens. It's the most beautiful setting ever. They give us the whole, even last year, the Botanical Gardens was closed because it was on a Monday. It does not matter. They give us the whole place, the garden, everything, do whatever and mingle and, you know, be in fellowship with other people who, it's like kindred souls that, you know, you could be in the space where people, you know, if they see you over there crying, it's not weird, mm-hmm. you know, or they may even come up and say, I understand, come here. Do you want a hug? I'll hug you, you know, that type of space. So that's the Wave of Light.
Sam, that is so beautiful. It's so unbelievably beautiful. I just have a quick story that is kind of related to that. With our stillborn, because we had made it to like the 6 month period of pregnancy, we started planning because we're like, oh, we're gonna make it this time. So we have family movie night, and I have these customized popcorn tubs that me, my husband, and my son already have, and I made one for Grayson, our baby. And it's so hard for me to see that tub. I'm getting emotional now. So that is such a beautiful ceremony to have for women who have gone through this, because, you know, you just have those moments of life. You know, we were so excited that we were going to be a family of four, and for like a funny reason, you know, they only give packages out for like the family of four. So it's only three of us. So we can't ever get the discount because it's only three of us. So we're like excited that we were going to have a family of four. So now even when we vacation, it's challenging because it's like, oh, we're not a family of four. Or when his birthday comes around or his death day, we acknowledge both of them. It's just, yeah. So I appreciate you. I appreciate that because that's beautiful.
Yeah. So thank we are out of time, unfortunately, but I want to just really say thank you for taking the time to talk and be on the show and share your stories, because I know that there are people that are listening that it's helped. We'll include all the links. I know, Sam, in your show, you've even talked to dads and gotten a lot of different perspectives of child loss. And so realizing that it's a whole community that feels that loss. So, you know, a lot of times we focus on the mom for miscarriage. You know, it ripples through the whole family. The grandma feels it. The, you know, the coworkers have to go through that with you, and so to speak. So, like I said, I just want to say thank you for everybody. We'll definitely have the links in, and I'll have you guys back anytime to talk to continue this conversation. So,
Dana, thank you so much. It was wonderful being here with you.
All right, so nice to meet you, ladies. Thank you.
It was wonderful meeting you too.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Black Girl INCLE. This podcast was recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, with post-production by the talented interns at Black Girl Media. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved and retained by Black Girl Media, LLC. Talk to you next time.